Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, David.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a moment of silence to do with as you wish, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively, which are across the main foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Sorry, I haven't done that yet. And I'll forget to do it, and mine will be the one that goes off. Also, we respectfully ask those present please to refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I'll now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open Big Book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we are on steps 8 and 9, or step 9, part 2. Please help me welcome our panel. We have Leanne and Candido. So we've made a list of all persons we have harmed and became willing to make amends to them all, and we may direct amends to such people wherever, direct amends wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others, right? Or something like that. So we're going to start with the first page 80 in the Big Book. The chances are we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we're mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if in this respect alcoholics are fundamentally worse than other people. The drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he's having a secret and exciting affair with a girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he's married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Leanne?
My name's Leanne. I'm an alcoholic.
Amen.
And I'm a member of this home group, and my sobriety date is August 8th, 1999. Yeah, so just a little bit to qualify myself for this paragraph. I did not come to Alcoholics Anonymous to stop drinking. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous to get my husband off my back. So we were married in 97. I went into that marriage for all the wrong reasons. It was all about my security, my financial insecurities, my emotional, you know, attachment, what I wanted. It had nothing to do with him, and that's what I brought to the table. So when we got married, he said I didn't have to continue working. And so for 2 years, I drank myself into oblivion. And he was really tired and really worn out. I can tell you that for me, there was no exciting affair because I drank at home by that point and didn't go out. And so at 8 o'clock, normally I would be passed out on the sofa or in a blackout talking to my mom or somebody on the phone, not remembering, you know, taking notes so that I could remember the next day what it was I talked to them about or whatever it was. Just pure insanity. So he was really worn out. And I came into that first meeting and, you know, saw everybody smiling and carrying on and talking about how they drank and they were happy. And I can tell you I was miserable. Like, I cried for a long time in AA at meetings, and I complained about him. And that's where I was for the first couple of years of sobriety, that it was his fault. I had no sympathy, no compassion, nothing for him. So this was a real process for me to get to this place, and it was, you know, quite a while in sobriety, because that fourth step that we talked about a couple of weeks ago, like, that was the beginning of me seeing that I really had any part. And I don't want to say part because then that means he has a part, but, well, he did have a part. that's the way that, you know, I looked at it. And so when I did that fourth step and then sat down with my sponsor and we looked at that fourth column, and I began to see my character defects, you know, and got to see for the first time in my life how inconsiderate I was. I never considered him. He was very angry by the time I got here because things started changing pretty quickly. There were things that I was doing before I came into AA that I could not continue doing and keep and not drink. It was my behavior, you know, those were the things that would put a drink in my hand because I couldn't live with myself. The spending of money, using the credit card to buy liquor, just all that kind of stuff. And all of that, you know, began to change, and he wasn't liking who he saw. I wasn't that fun girl that he remembered before we got married. Like, it's like he had this way of not looking at me the last 2 years of my drinking, you know, what it was really like. And he was very angry. And I was very angry. And I thought, we did do marriage counseling for a while, and I may share part of that later on. But anyway, so what I came here with was a selfish, inconsiderate person. Like, that was who I was. And so there were lots of domestic problems. We shared space for a while where we were roommates. And that's how it felt like for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous. But I think I'll stop there.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Candida.
Hey, Candida. Hey, Candida.
I'm really grateful to be here tonight and sharing. I'm nervous. You know, it means a lot to me to be speaking here tonight because, you know, I'm not going to be here anymore in 2 weeks. So I'm really glad that David asked me. This is my home group as well. My sobriety date is November 23rd of 2000. And you know, I can't relate a lot to this paragraph because I wasn't married. I was too drunk to get into domestic affairs. That's really the truth. But some things did come to mind, like listening to those readings. And you know, what came to me is like I, you know, when I first came into the program and I did my first steps, I don't think I really, you know, saw like what my part was in my relationships. But as I stayed sober longer, I think I've seen a lot more. And, you know, what came to mind here is that I would emotionally exhaust people. Like, I had no idea that you're supposed to have like a friend, a mother, a sister, a brother, a partner. Like, my partner had to be everything. And when they came up short, I was like a brat, you know? And, you know, what I was going to say about that is I came into the program, and right when I got sober, I lost a relationship, and I was like really in love with this person, and my heart was completely broken. And I'm so grateful for that broken heart, because it made me a little more desperate to work this program. It gave me an extra incentive. And honestly, I was kind of had this like fairy tale in my mind that I was going to get to my ninth step. I was going to show up at her door and she was going to forgive me. We were going to live happily ever after. And my sponsor immediately told me when I got to my ninth step, it's like, your mentor is to leave her alone. Which, you know, I did take the suggestion, and thankfully, you know, through years of doing the right thing, I was able to bump into her and make a heartfelt amend. And it was beautiful. But some of the things that stand out to me from this reading is, you know, which is big for me in the ninth step, is I can't go in to make amends where I'm going to, like, hurt someone else. Like, you know, the spirit of the ninth step is for me to think of the feelings of other people and not, like, my selfish, like, wanting to get something off my chest, you know. And thankfully, I wasn't in a situation where I had to, you know, to do that. But like I said, you know, a lot of the things that I needed to make amends for, I didn't even see. And that, you know, just, you know, I came into the program, I thought I was a victim of the world, like the world owed me something. And I thought I was such a generous person, and I was so nice. And what I started to realize is that I had a very strong sense of entitlement. And I thought, just because I had like this really bad childhood, that the world owed me something. And, you know, I exhausted people, took, and then, you know, and, you know, I used to say, I've said, you know, I was the kind of person that if you gave me your finger, I took your hand. If you gave me your hand, I took your arm. And if you gave me your arm, I took everything. But I didn't mean to do it. And thankfully, for getting sober and being part of, like, AA, you know, I started to learn immediately just by, like, doing service. Like, you know, I used to hear in the meetings, like, clean the ashtrays, put the chairs away, do service, get involved. And I really took that to heart. And by getting involved, just by doing different actions, I started to become a different person. And, you know, there's so many beautiful things. I mean, this one paragraph kind of stirs me up, because, you know, I didn't do, you know, some of those things while I was drinking, but since I've been sober, I have made mistakes like that. And so it's a little like, you know, just because I get sober, not all that stuff stops. You know, I still have to watch my behavior in my sex relationships, for sure. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to continue on page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would not have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of the cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything to matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand the wind stopped blowing?"
Yeah, so with my relationships and This really is, it's interesting, I was asked to speak on this tonight, because for me, 89 is kind of, that domestic problem is kind of where I am today, having to look at some things. And it's really uncomfortable, because I've been sober for a little while, and this stuff still comes up, you know, like my character defects and how I see things, my perspective, my actions, my reactions. Today I didn't have a very good reaction to something. And, you know, my marriage suffers when that happens. You know, when I look at you like you have three heads. This has been a real walk for us. So we've been married 20 years this year in June. And I can tell you there are times that I think, forget it. You know, this is too much work. Because I get to see some people in my friends and in AA that aren't married. And I think, oh, that would be so much easier. You know, that's just where I can be some days, you know. Isn't that I don't love him. My whole conception of what love was has been so skewed. Like I said, when, you know, it was always about what I can get, never about what I could offer or give to the other person. And with my parents, you know, I lost my mom 2 years ago and almost three. And for amends, I really thought where I was for my first 7 years of sobriety, I hadn't completed this. And I knew I needed to make a change in my sponsorship, and things transpired and I made a change. And so that sponsor at that time that I got really talked to me about direct amends, because I hadn't made any. Well, I had to my father. And so that was, you know, a process for me, looking at my sister, my brother, my mother. And with my mother, a lot of that was living amends. She had Alzheimer's. And I wish that I had said some things probably earlier on in my sobriety and in her illness, because she lived, you know, several more years after that. But and I was there for her. I mean, we had a good relationship, so I thought, I don't need to make direct amends. And my sponsor really honed in on me about what I need, you know, what the harm was that I really caused her. This is a woman who would sit up until I came home at night on the sofa waiting for me to come home from the time I was in high school. You know, she had to lock the liquor cabinet, put a lock on it. One night I was in college and I was home for break and I didn't come home that night. Like, the terror that I put her through. And so we were able to sit down and I was able to talk to her about that. You know, she was just happy to see me happy, to see me change. I'd held the family hostage for a long time in my early years, in my teen years, where they had me going to psychiatrists and psychologists from the time I was like 13 or 14. And until I was old enough to make a decision, I wasn't going to do that anymore. And they could not. I mean, they wanted the best for me. And when I did my four step, you know, I had a lot of resentment towards them. It's so crazy today to look back at that. I was adopted, and they didn't tell me until I was 9. And my sister was adopted, and they told her she was 7. And they waited. They went to a therapist or somebody that said, you know, wait till they're both old enough. And so I was 9 and she was 7. And when they sat down and told us that we were adopted, it was like the floor dropped out of my life. Like, it was me. Other people may not react that way. And my sister got mad and I got quiet. And that was my motto. You know, they never could get into me to figure out, like, I would just shut down. And it's been an interesting walk, and that's kind of that amends process that I was able to talk to my dad about that. My sister found her birth mother and father, and I did at 2 years medical history that I was trying to find out, and she wasn't interested in meeting or anything like that. I found out a little bit of medical history, but through that process, through this process, I've been able to open up. I was able to open up through my dad, because he really thought it was something that he had done, my alcoholism. And I was able to talk with him openly and honestly that it wasn't you. There's nothing that you could have done differently that wouldn't have made me the way that I am, you know? And through the years, he's been able to share some things with me. Like when my mom died, through the circles, it got back to the lady that had done my adoption papers. She called my dad and said, "I'm so sorry to hear about Judy." And he was able to talk to me about that because he knew I was open. You know, we were able to have a conversation. My birthday, probably 5 or 6 years ago, I still have it in my phone. He sent me a text and then he emailed it to me, this beautiful note about the day I was born. You know, and for him, you know, so we don't know what it's going to open up when we make the amends. My sponsor was really keyed in on that, that this isn't about getting a relationship back. It's not about, because God's in charge. This is about opening the door and, you know, telling what the harm was that we did to them and that I was wrong. Not that I'm sorry, but that I'm wrong. And then my behavior needs to change. You know, one of those things with my husband, and this has been in sobriety, going shopping, using my money, but bringing the stuff home and not telling him about it. And he'd see a new whatever on me and say, "Where'd you get that from?" And I'm like, "Oh, I bought it." And so my sponsor said, "You know, you need to look at this behavior, because it was becoming a problem in our marriage." He would get mad. Like, you know, not that I have to tell him everything, you know, but that I was hiding it. It was me. My behavior was hiding it. And so I had to make amends for that and tell him that I'm not going to do that anymore. And so now, for me, if I'm out there and I buy something, you know, I'll mention it. I'll say, "This is what I did," you know, but that was in sobriety. And all these things have, because he had no trust. Like, I had totally shot all that to pieces by the time I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so for me in sobriety, like, this really is that tornado roaring through the lives of everybody. And to be able to see where my selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil, whether it was, you know, I can do it at work, I can do it at home, I can do it, you know, I did it growing up, and really being willing to sit down and say, you know, I was wrong. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leah.
Thank you, Dan. You know, for me, with the whole family thing, it's a little different. You know, both my parents were alcoholics. They were insane, and they were horrible parents. I'm not making that up. So when I got to my ninth step with my mom, you know, I was like, why do I need to make amends to her? And my sponsor said, "Why don't you keep it simple and just tell her maybe I could have been a better daughter?" And I was willing, and I did that. And I'm so grateful for that suggestion, because it really did just open the door a little bit. And in the big book, it talks about, there's a story at the back of the book that talks about freedom from bondage. A woman that, like, does a four-step, and after doing a four-step, a lot of her resentments are taken away, but there's, like, this one that she can't get rid of. And that was totally my experience. I mean, I wrote, there was so much abuse in my childhood, so many things that happened. And after doing that four-step, those resentments left. But my mother, I couldn't stand her. And there were valid reasons for that. You know, she was not only an active alcoholic, but she was a very cruel person. And she did a lot of things to me and my brothers that were, you know. And so I hated her. And I was 3 years sober, and I ended up in the hospital, and she was in North Carolina, and she's like, "I'm gonna come see you." And I'm like, "Don't come." And she came anyways. And then I would be like, "Okay, you need to leave." And then when she was leaving, I went to, like, hug her. And when I went to hug her, like, I told her, "Take care of yourself." And when I heard myself say that, I thought, that's what people are telling me. Like, for a moment, I just had this, like, little something shifted. And it was because I did that prayer. Like, my sponsor said, just pray for her. Pray for her every day. And so I remember talking to my brother one day. And my brother is probably more, he's sober now. And I have to hear his rants every day about my mom. He probably hates my mother more than I did, and I don't know why he ever said this, but he did. I called him, I said, "You know, it's not so much that our mother did what she did, but now she acts like nothing ever happened." And my brother said, "No." I go, "It's like she's in denial." And my brother said, "No, Kenita, she's not in denial, she's trying to make things right." And when he said that, it was like everything just melted away. It was like, here I am trying to put my life together, try to like build those bridges back to my life, and I'm not giving my mother the opportunity. And from that moment on, I took her phone calls, and you know, we started to have this relationship. And what's cool is that I stopped expecting my mother to be a mother. I just, it was like, okay, we didn't get that. Let's take it from here. And there was a point when I was 5 years sober, I was in a very intensive school program, and she had a heart attack. And I remember just dropping everything and getting on a flight. And I remember when I was in that airplane, I thought, man, if my mom dies right now, I'm gonna be so sad. But I started thinking of anything that I had to say to her or anything that I needed to like, that we needed to talk about. And it was like, it's all been taken care of. Like there has been no rock that hasn't been unturned. And I was like, that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Like in that moment, I was like, AA gave me that. So my mother dies today, I'll be sad. But at least, you know, I feel like I've done my part. And today, you know, it's challenging. Like, I think it's layers of the onion. Like, amends for me are not like, they keep on going. And, you know, when my mom, she's not in recovery. I've told her about recovery. You know, she doesn't drink, but she doesn't have a program. So it's very hard dealing with her. So even though my behavior a lot of times is nice, my feelings are not very nice. And I know she senses it. And this Christmas, I had her over and, no, Thanksgiving, and I planned this like trip to DC for her. Like I went out of my way and I did all these like special things, like monetarily things. But at the end of it, she's like, you don't like me. And I was like, what do you mean? And I was like all offended. I did this and that and this for you. And she, you know, she started crying, and I thought, and then another healing happened, you know, another layer, like compassion. Like this woman is not waking up in the morning intending to be, you know, she's just doing the best she can. And just watching her in DC, seeing her get old, and I thought, you know, at some point, I can't blame the person. I have to blame the disease. You know, the disease of alcoholism is rampant. It ran through my childhood, it you know, and it also, like, affected me. And I, you know, and it's like, maybe just let my mother off the hook, you know, on a deeper, deeper level. Like, I do feel that I have forgiven her, but this was, like, a deeper forgiveness. And you know, for my family, like my father, he has Parkinson's, he's 80-something years old, you know, and I show up for him, I pay his bills, I take care of his finances. Those for me are like my way of doing amends. In my family, it wasn't, you know, people didn't show up for each other, people didn't have conversations. It was a very dysfunctional family. But I know that I do my part. Like my wish, and I hate to say this, and I tell my sponsor, I'm like, if I could disconnect myself from my family and never see them again, I'd be very happy. But I know that that would not, that's not what my God wants me to do. And I know that that wouldn't be, you know, in my, for my best spiritual growth. So, you know, I do my part and I do what I can. And I feel that, I mean, sometimes it surprises me the way I show up, you know, because that wasn't me before. Like, I didn't show up for anybody. I wasn't responsible for anything. And it's a tightrope walk because I'm dealing with people that are not in recovery, but I'm grateful for, you know, what AA has given me, and you know, and it's going to be an ongoing living process. It's not going to end. It keeps on growing. Like this last Thanksgiving, I saw that with my mother. It was very, very beautiful, and actually, it really did soften my heart. You know, I take her calls a little different now, and I look forward to like having a better relationship with her. That's all. Thanks.
All right, we're going to continue on page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it, being careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
I didn't follow this when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I would leave the book open, hoping my husband would read it or share with him. I had a stack of self-help, you know, like daily meditations. Now I have two in the big book. But anyway, and, you know, would read, you know, about this. And my sponsor, you know, would just say, why don't you just put that away? Leave him alone. And, but something has happened as a result of me continually doing this. I mean, he sees me every morning reading and praying. In some of our discussions are, for example, this is pretty wild. Today we had to go pick up something for his family, and we went, and one of the things wasn't ready. And I was like, you know, got to drive back through the tunnel tomorrow, and blah 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 blah. And before we went in, he was looking at something to purchase, and he said, I'll just make a decision later. Well, because that thing wasn't there, they gave him that thing, you know, that he was looking at before they came out. It was a phone cover, and he was looking at it. He said, I'll buy one later. And then when they didn't have the phone ready, they said, well, we'll give you this phone cover. Like, and we got out of there, and I said, do you find that odd? Like, you were looking at that, and you decided you weren't going to get it, and then 5 minutes later, he says, why don't you pick out a phone cover, because we didn't have what you came here to get. Like, that, you know, you got this email. And he's like, yeah, I guess that's pretty unusual. And so we're, you know, we begin to have some little conversations, like I'll question these little God things that happen in our life. The last 7 years, he's not seven, maybe 5 years. He's been FaceTiming his mother every morning. She lives overseas, and he calls her every freaking day. I mean, it's like he didn't used to do that. You know, I mean, he was busy working, but he really, it's like, so, you know, things change. Like, we have to live this. He sees me working with other alcoholics. For me to take the time out to do that, or tonight to come here, and I said, you know, I've got a meeting at 5:30, and I'm going to go to the group with the group after dinner. I'll see you at 9:30. You know, it's like he knows that this is important. He hated it at first, and it's not that some days he says, "Do you have to go tonight?" You know, because that happens once in a while. Because sometimes my life in AA can get busy for, you know, a week or two at a time. So he really doesn't express a desire to sit there and read my books with me or anything like that. It is more about my, you know, am I practicing love and tolerance? And when I'm not, it's very obvious. Like today when I looked at him, like, he had three heads, you know, and so I've got some inventory to do there on that. But with, you know, with this, with a long period of reconstruction, you know, I've worked with my brother for 17 years now, and he had just started working there when they kind of made a position for me, basically, to have a part-time job there. And you know, I started out at $8.75 or whatever it was an hour, and I suited up and showed up. And after he saw me walk that for seventh year, I got really sick, and at 5 years of sobriety, I got really sick, and so I was out of work for 2 years. But the day I went back, I was going back part-time, and he said, I really need you full-time. And in the back of my head, it's like, I remember my husband saying, you don't have to work. and it was suggested to me that I take that full-time position, and I did that for about 8 years. I'm back at part-time now, but you know, suiting up and showing up, and he knows he can count on me today. And things happen when I'm at work. I remember one day he talked about growing up, and there was this, my parents had left to go up to Washington, and they left me. I was the oldest, home with my sister and my brother. They were younger than me. My brother was 5 years younger from me, and they left money for pizza. And this happened at work. It's so weird, like, what, 25, 30 years later? And he goes, yeah, I remember that day when Mom and Dad went to Washington and left me with you and Lori, and y'all ordered a pizza, and I was out on my bike, and I came home, and there was no pizza left. You gave it to all your friends. Now I could have blown past that, you know, but I knew that there was something I needed to do about that, and I talked to my sponsor about it, and there are some direct amends I needed to make about that. So, you know, I can sit here and do my 8-step list and go and make those amends, but I'll tell you that God has revealed a lot of things in my sobriety that have been from my past that didn't come out on that first list of, you know, what I need to do. And he knows today that I wouldn't do that, you know, and that I was wrong in that. It was all about me and pleasing my friends, and if he didn't have something to eat when he got home, then too bad. I mean, that was my thinking. You know, I've made direct amends to him, obviously, about the pizza, but also just for my inconsiderate habits. You know, I would have parties, and I taught him how to drink. Thank God he's not an alcoholic. But, you know, that's what I did growing up, because he was at those parties that my friends were, you know, and I was, like, letting him know it's okay if you're not 21 to drink. So, you know, today, they know that when I say I'm going to be somewhere, I'm going to be somewhere. If they need a ear, you know, he calls me in his office a lot and asks my opinion on things. And it blows me away. My behavior will convince them definitely more than my words. But that doesn't excuse me for not making direct amends when I need to. Thanks.
Thank you. You know, that I love that, those two paragraphs, so beautiful. I remember, you know, when I got onto my 9-step, my sponsor looked at me and he's like, you know, Candida, a lot of amends are changing your behavior. And I didn't understand what that meant. But, you know, he was absolutely right. And kind of what Leanne said is, like, people know today they can rely on me, or, you know, what happened here. And there was something I was going to say. I lost my train of thought. Sorry. So today I was thinking a little bit about this 8th and 9th step, and I was thinking, you know, the stuff that I did when I got onto my 9th step. And I have to be honest, I don't know if I have the willingness that I did. Like, when my sponsor asked me to do certain things, like, I'm so grateful that I had the willingness to do them, because I really do believe it made the difference. Like, who's sitting here today is a direct result of the willingness to take certain actions. So I remember I got on my 9-step, and it was like a few things she asked me to do, and I was like, oh my God, I can't do that. And, you know, I did them, and this is what I wanted to say. You know, I worked the steps, and I believe that the steps worked me. You know, I got up to that 5th step, and all of a sudden, like, when that 9-step came, it was like, it started to work me. I remember when I was working in a company, I would always call out sick, because whenever I drank, I couldn't go to work the next day. So I would, like, really hold off on drinking till the weekends. Like, I would, like, white-knuckle it during the week until Friday, and then I would all let loose. Because I knew if I drank on a Monday or Tuesday, I wasn't going to show up to work the next day. So, you know, I had an employer that she was an enabler, and, you know, she put up with me. She should have fired me. She didn't. And I remember when I got onto my 9-step, I was like, how do I make a mentor that she's not even there as a supervisor anymore? And I got a call from that same company, and they did, like, temporary work. It was, like, for the United Way, doing packages and stuff. And they hired me seasonally right when I got onto my 9-step. And I remember going back to that job and just not calling out sick, showing up, being a good employee. And it was like God's way of letting me make an amend. And I was able to make a direct amend to that boss. But the bigger amend was just like being able to come back and be somebody different, not be that same person anymore. And, you know, for me with the 9-step, I have had the difference between a God-directed amend and a self-directed amend. Like, I was talking about that one girlfriend that when I got into the program, my sponsor said, don't contact her. I owed her a lot of money, and I had to pay it back. So what I did me and my sponsor came up with an agreement. I mailed a check every month. And the last words that this girl spoke to me before I left was like, "You're on my blacklist. I never want to see you again." And 3 years passed. I was able to pay everything in full that I owed her. And one day I was outside of a Publix, and she walked out, and the first thing she did when she saw me was smile. It was such a sincere smile. And I said, "You know, I'm so sorry for the things that I did." And you know, I was able to make an amend. And she's like, "You know, Kenita, don't worry about that." But it was like so divinely inspired. And then after that, I took it a step further. And I'm like, okay, now I'm going to take a list of all the things I did and directly make amends. And she met up for it, and it didn't feel the same, you know. And what I learned from that experience is like, you know, same thing happened with my sister, you know. God inspired and me inspired. And, you know, for me, the biggest part of the ninth step is that I have to really take into consideration other people, you know, like it's the well-being of other people, not, you know, what I want to get out of this. And I'm very selfish, you know. I want to get a friendship back. I want to get this back. I want a load off my chest, you know. And this step, it was so magical for me. Like, so many little miracles happened like that, where people were put back in my life. And I remember, like, I would go into the, talking about, like, we have to live it, like a won't fill the bill, like a, you know, we have to behave differently, we have to be different people. And I remember when I would walk into the bars, I'd be like, "Oh no, here she comes again." And like those same people, like, you know, after a little while being in this program, like that wasn't people's reactions toward me. And it's just, you know, by taking these actions, doing this work, you know, things change. And like in my family, I'm the one that people turn to, like, you know, for help, to count on. You know, I'm in a job right now where they were gonna pay lots of money to keep me. That wasn't happening when I was drinking, promise. You know, and that, like, the proof is in the pudding, you know. Like, I owe that all to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, because AA taught me how to be a better person, because I definitely left to my own devices. I didn't come up with those ideas, you know, and I'm very grateful for this program. Thank you.
We're going to continue on page 83. "There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone."
The sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble. I'll share it with my sister. This was one, I really didn't think I'd done anything wrong. And my sponsor was very patient and tolerant and loving, and had me look at it. And it took a long time. And it wasn't about me explaining myself. Anytime I've gone to make amends, this isn't about explaining what I did. Like, and I didn't know how to approach. Like, I mean, we had a relationship. Like I said, it was, you know, she lives over here in Norfolk, and, you know, when her first son was born, I was there in the hospital room, and we have a relationship. But I did have some direct amends to make there. And I didn't know how I was going to approach the subject. And so it's always been suggested that I pray, you know, "God, please give me the words." And I had to, what I would do before these amends is that I would write like a letter, and it was just like a paragraph or whatever it was I needed to say, but I would go over it with my sponsor, and she'd kind of help me walk through that. Because a lot of times, you know, it was selfish, dishonest, you know, whatever, and it's like, this isn't about me explaining myself, it's about the harm that I've done. I didn't treat you the way you deserve to be treated. You know, that was a big one for me. And with my sister, we went to lunch, and it had been weighing on me, and I knew, it was like my heart starts pounding, like I knew I need to make this amends, and I'd been talking with my sponsor with it, and I knew what I needed to say. And so we were at lunch, and my heart's pounding, and I'm like, how am I going to like broach this? Because for me, when it talks about on one of these, we didn't read it tonight, but we talk about we have to say this or we're not going to get over drinking, like to let the person know that. Like, I didn't, I was, it was explained to me not to bring that to the table, and I didn't do that. So it's like, how do you bring it up? And it was really cool because she was talking about a friend of hers that was an addict, and she was really concerned about him. He'd just moved back from D.C., and he was, you know, friends with the family and would come over, and she said, I'm just really concerned about him, going on and on and on about him. And at that moment, like, it clicked with me. Like, she cared about me like she cares about him. All those years growing up when I thought, because she was 2 years younger than me, and I thought that she was nitpicking at me or whatever. She wanted the best for me, and I kept shutting that down. There were things, this is part of my story. I'm going to share it. Oh, Lordy. So at the time of 13, I would get really angry. This was before I even picked up a drink. And I had a real self-defeating behavior that I would do, and I would pull my hair. And to the point that I wore wigs in high school. And she would lay in bed at night and could hear me. And she would say, Liam, please stop. And I would get so mad. It's like, and what she went through to care about me and what I was doing, like she wanted me not to do that, truly. And I would get so mad, like I would get in up the next day and I'd go in and I'd read her diary. Or I'd, whatever it was to get back at her, like underneath the table, because I was so angry at her trying to control me. That's the way I looked at it. And in that moment when I was having lunch with her and she's talking about her friend that's an addict, and that's how much she cared about him and wanted what was best for him, like that's when the nickel dropped. Like I said, this is how she was treating me growing up, and I couldn't see it. And I saw it at that moment. And we were able to talk about that. And she had no idea because I was so secretive. Like I was manipulative. I'd do it behind your back, you know, whatever. And, you know, and she said I had no idea. And I said, I know you loved me and you cared about me. And I didn't treat you the way that a sister should be treated, you know? And I didn't know what was going to happen there. Because my amends to her was buying a ticket to go to an Elton John concert when he was over here at ODU. I spent $650 for us to have two tickets so we could sit way up front. Like, that was my amends. Like, I thought financially, like, I would just buy that. You know, I didn't have to make direct amends to her. We went to the concert, had a great time, but it didn't do anything, you know. But what that did that day at lunch is it's opened the door where, like in October, my husband was out of the country, and she called me just to ask how I was doing. I don't know that she's ever done that, you know. And this was just last October. So we don't know what it's going to do. Like, I keep thinking in my mind, we need to be best buddies. We're not best buddies. You know, I care about her. I love her. We keep in contact. I'm going to see her next Christmas, in this Christmas Eve. We're going to go over there for dinner, stuff like that. I'm going to go to her house Thursday for a Carolyn party. I mean, you know, so I show up when she asks me to come and participate when I'm invited, you know, and not hounding her. Like, I have to have this relationship. It has to be close. I don't know if that was about that paragraph or not, but anyway, sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble. Like, I don't know. I show up. I have to have the willingness to do this, to make the amends, and then it really is up to God what happens. He's going to take me where I need to go, but I got to be willing to do this. Thanks.
Thank you. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them. If we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Definitely I have a few experiences that come to mind with that. Something that, you know, my sponsor told me to write. My aunt passed away, and, you know, she was very, very poor, both my aunts. And they saved up all this money, you know, to buy me and my cousin, you know, these necklaces. And I remember I pawned one of the necklaces for like $20 to go get a beer or something, you know. And how can I tell her that? And I still have so much guilt about that because I didn't appreciate it as a child. That, and so, you know, I did that letter. But there was another situation very similar where, you know, I really couldn't make a direct amend because the person had passed, my aunt passed. But, you know, I really did let my higher power know if there's ever, you know, a situation or an opportunity that I could, you know, make this right. Like, if it presents it, I'm all on it, you know? And with one situation, it actually did show up, and it was really beautiful. When I got to, like, the parts where my ex-relationships, my sponsor really didn't want me going back into these people's lives, and it's like, you're a menace to stay away from them. And, you know, I took that direction. But yeah, I did. I felt like I paid back monetary things, but I felt like I still owed something. And one of my first partner passed away, and I showed up to the mother's house. It was her only daughter. And she had no one to help her. And I remember I helped her, like, empty out her whole apartment. And, you know, that woman was like, why did this girl, like, after so many years, like 20 years, I haven't seen her, like, from high school come and, you know, like, I could tell how much that impacted her. And it was such a beautiful feeling because it was like, you know, I did get an opportunity in some way to, like, make, you know, those things right. And so, like Leanne said, I think, you know, for me, amends have been layers. It's been, like, the beginning, just opening the door, and then another opportunity is deeper and deeper. And I don't see everything at first. I still don't see everything. Like, I have huge blind spots. But, like, the situation with my mother over Thanksgiving, if I keep my heart open and I let go of the judgments, and, you know, there'll be those opportunities. And it kind of is in that reading there, like, we're supposed to come, you know, like the paragraph we read before, like, you know, a demonstration of God's love. And I feel like with my mother that day, it was like, you know, my job here is to love her and to let go of the past. You know, the past is the past, and let's move forward. And I have to be reminded of that so much, because I get into my head, I get into the criticism, the judgment, and you did this and I did that. And that's really not, you know, the spirit of the ninth step. So I'm grateful that I got an opportunity to share on this tonight. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, our final paragraph is page 83. You've probably heard it before. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. Just a couple minutes each.
Okay. Yeah, they used to read these a lot at when I first got sober at every meeting. And I was hooked because I wanted that. But I didn't want to have to work for it. it's like I believe my sponsor was going to do this for me. Like, I know that sounds so crazy, but I felt so small. Like, it was like going back to kindergarten. Like, I thought, I have no skills. I have no, like, I didn't know. I just felt so, that self-loathing and self-pity. I mean, it was oozing out of me. And I thought, how can any of this happen? You know, but there was a promise there that if I will do this and follow through with it and continue to follow through with it, that I will be given peace, comfort, serenity. Like, that's what's happened as a result of this. But I have to keep doing it. Like, I have to keep working for this, that daily reprieve, you know, that we're given. And it's continuing on with the rest of the steps, you know, 10, 11, and 12. Like, I have to continue to do this. And I am given a gauge. I think the biggest thing by after each of the amends that I get is there's some type of there's a gauge I'm given, like a conscience, maybe, you know, that happens as a result of this, where I get that icky feeling on the inside like I got this morning, you know, when my character defects are flaring up. But I do have to continue, you know, to look at this every day and surrender, you know, to say, God, please, you know, show me what I need to see, and give me the strength to carry on with this. Because there's some days, I mean, it's not all happy-go-lucky, you know, that hasn't been my experience. But there's never a day that is too much that I have to take a drink. I guess that's what I'm saying. So I've got in here written, spirituality is not static. Somebody must have said that at a meeting. And, you know, I have to quiet that disturbance and get back at center, or I will be making amends again, you know. That's all I've got. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Leah.
I love those promises, and it's funny. I don't know how this works, but it definitely works. And there's a part in the Big Book where it says we work out our problems on an altruistic plane, like we straighten out mentally and physically. I don't know the exact wording, but, you know, there's something about doing these actions. You know, I came into this program when I was 24 years old. I was a high school dropout. I had nothing to show for my life. I was a hot mess in every way, trust me. And I think by the age of 26, after, you know, doing what I was told to do here, my sponsor said, just do this and everything else will work out, trust me. Like, just plug away at this and your life will change. And that really was my experience. I think I was 26 years old and I was like, it was like if I had never, like, God put me back to an equal playing ground. Like, I was like a 26-year-old that had never done all that damage, you know? And I mean, there's no way to explain that. It's like he leveled the playing field. And it was only because I did these things, you know, nothing else. So it really works. It worked for me. Thanks.
Thank you. We're gonna pass the seventh tradition basket. I hope. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Although the amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world, we may want to remember that a dollar does not support as many services as it used to. Are there any announcements for the good of AA?
Aaliyah.
Hey, Aaliyah.
My home group, AA 101, we will be having our breakfast brunch anniversary. Not really sure the title, I messed it up. But it's going to be January 7th, Brick House Classroom, 10 o'clock brunch, eggs, bacon, pancakes, yeah, all the good stuff, fruit juice. It's going to be really good. And then at 11, we have a speaker.
Crystal Carroll.
Yes, her, coming from Richmond. There's flyers located here on the table, so we would like you guys to come and join us.
Awesome.
Thank you.
There's one thing drunks can do, it's breakfast. Anybody else? This group, this one right here. Over on the table, you'll see these lovely little flyers. Please feel free to take some back to your groups and help us get the word out. On Monday, January 22nd, in this room, there'll be a 6 p.m. potluck. The meeting normally starts at 7, but we'll have a 6 o'clock potluck. Bring a dish if you wish. 7 o'clock, we're having Chris R. from Ingram, Texas, coming all the way up here to tell his story. And it's electrifying. So So January 22nd, 6 p.m. potluck, 7 o'clock speaker. Chris R. All are welcome. Bring a dish if you wish. Mr. W.
Yeah, and if you don't get enough to eat on the 22nd, come to the principal's group on January 23rd, which will be Tuesday night. This is for our and group anniversary. Our speaker will be Sandy Gale, coming up out of Rocky Mount, North Carolina. She's got about 25 years of drive and brings some fantastic women up with her. We'll start at 6:30. The speaker will be put on. And at 7:45, the speaker will go on inside the sanctuary. Please come out and visit. Even on a snowstorm one year, we still had 60 people in a snowstorm. It was more about the food than anything else. Yeah, come on out and visit. Ride at the Harvest Assembly Church out on the corner of Kempfield Road and Greenbrier Parkway.
Thanks, Jim. All right, Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. And newcomers, you're the reason we're here. Is there anybody in the room tonight in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. Anybody?
Calvin.
Hey, Calvin.
Welcome. Anybody else? All right. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available at this table after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come up, ask me questions. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. And could we please thank this wonderful panel one more time? Do you have something, Kendra?
I was going to read.
Okay. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Plaza del
Sol.
Yeah?
We'll be here next week.
You, what?
We're going to be here next week, too.
Oh, yeah. Good. Thank you. Okay. All right, I can't get through Plaza del Sol ever. Plaza del Sol, I had it this time. 22nd and Colonial, yeah? Okay, go down Colonial. If you go over the railroad tracks, you've gone too far. We'll all be there, maybe not all of us. And then we will also be meeting Christmas Day and New Year's Day, both fall on Monday. And Simple Actions will be meeting, but next week we'll be meeting at where Cornerstone meets in the house on the church property at the corner of Raleigh and Colonial. I think it's 8:20. We'll be there next Monday night. Kendra, would you like to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Yes, thank you,
Dave. Nice and loud. Lord's Prayer?
Let's go in front of
the table. I'm sorry.
Let's go in front of the table.
Brother. Our Father?